Welcome to Photoactive, a podcast about photography and technology. I'm Kirk McElhern.
And I'm Jeff Carlson.
So if what I read is true, the internet has been going crazy about a new camera.
The entire internet. It's an amazing phenomenon.
Well, go on. Tell us about it. What is this amazing phenomenon?
Okay. So this amazing phenomenon is the Fujifilm X106. And that's
I thought it was X100VI.
Well, that's how you... Yes. previously you had the X100V, and that's what they called it. And this is the VI because it is the sixth of the X100 line. However, they are calling it the X106, I guess because VI sounds weird or confusing or I don't know. So it's the X100 Roman numeral 6.
And their naming convention has been strange because the initial camera was the X100. Then came the X100S. What could S be? Oh, second. Then the X100T, third. The X100F, fourth. The X100V, fifth. They locked themselves into a corner.
They did a little bit. But I mean, you know, the advantage is they're unique. Because you can't do 100S again because, you know, it's already been done. You can't do 100, like X100X. That doesn't make any sense. So, and I also saw a lot of people who are like trying to retroactively say, well, if they're calling it the X106 now, does that mean we have to call the other one the X105? And like, no, just
call it what you want.
Call it the thing. Yeah. It's like Mac OS X. People always said Mac OS X. It's actually Mac OS 10, but it didn't matter. I mean, that's what Apple called it.
I recall either Tim Cook or Steve Jobs at one point saying Mac OS X on stage, and it was like a slip-up,
yeah.
I think. But I guess Fujifilm's naming is better than Sony, who had the RX7A Mark 7 type thing. It's like, why can't... Credit to Apple. iPhone 15. No confusion there.
This is true. Actually, because I'm not a Sony shooter... Only in the last year did I learn what those mean. Like the A7R, the R, and forgive me if I'm screwing this up off the top of my head, the R indicates resolution. So those are the ones that have like the 60 megapixel sensor. The A7, I think, has like a 26 or a 40 megapixel. So the R is the resolution version, and then... The others are like maybe something that's better for fast action or something like that. But I had no idea.
Cameras are one of the worst named products after hi-fi.
Yes, they are. Oh, God.
Amplifiers and things like that. The numbering makes absolutely no sense. Some companies will have like if it's a 10, 11, 12, 13, it's one thing. If it's 100 something, it's another thing. And, you know, there will be some sort of logic. But you have to be part of the in-group to understand what the naming is. And if you're not, you're looking at it from the outside and you're confused. Anyway, the entire internet has gone crazy. Do you know that there were 500,000 pre-orders for this camera in China?
I did know that.
Yes, except it's not true.
What? I did see that there were 500,000 pre-orders.
And, right, and it's
not true.
And
actually, I've not heard anything about others.
Yeah,
but,
it's
oh,
not
really,
true.
It's not.
You know, any site with the name Rumors in it is often mistaken. Now, to be fair, Mac Rumors doesn't do that anymore. They're a very good Mac site. They initially started as a Mac Rumors site, so it was a hit and miss. So there's a Fuji Rumors site, and basically it was a bad translation from Chinese. What happened is that there was a lottery to win a free camera, and 500,000 people entered the lottery.
That's totally the same.
Yeah, almost. It's the same as buying them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What I find interesting, so our topic today is, if you've read the title of the podcast episode, we're talking about fixed lens cameras, and I think we did this a while ago. There aren't that many fixed lens cameras. There's the Fuji X100 line, there's the Leica Q line, there's the Ricoh GR line. I saw just today in Apple News an article from one of the tech or photo sites about the best fixed lens cameras, and so here's the Fuji, here's the Leica, here's the Ricoh, and here's a Sony something. It may not be a fixed lens, but... Like, dude, you had one job. You're writing about fixed lens cameras. Why do you then throw in an interchangeable lens camera? But fixed lens cameras are pretty cool. So you've got an X100V and I've got a Leica Q3. Yes. And I have to admit, I am tempted by the Fujifilm X100V.
Six.
Six. Because I had an X100F, one of my favorite cameras ever. Small, pocketable, easy to use, has that, it feels like a camera, right? Not one of them big-ass DSLRs. And the idea of having a small, inexpensive camera to take around, I know $1,600 or whatever, this is not inexpensive, but compared to the Q3, I kind of like that idea. So we're recording this on February 27th. It goes on sale tomorrow, February 28th. I noticed that Amazon here hasn't listed it at all yet. And I kind of wonder if they're going to list it tomorrow on the 28th. So a number of retailers took pre-orders, and then the pre-orders were all pre-ordered. For instance, I went to the John Lewis website. John Lewis is a department store, kind of like a Macy's, and they sell a little bit of everything. Okay. And they said pre-orders have all been filled. And this was the first day it was announced. So I wonder if Amazon's going to drop this tomorrow on the 28th, that they've got some stock and they didn't want to deal with pre-orders, because if you pre-order on Amazon, you're not on a waiting list. You've actually placed an order, and Amazon can't manage it the way some of these camera stores do, where they set up a waiting list. I am tempted. I like the camera. To me, it's one of the best cameras you can get. There's something about it, it's got everything a camera needs. And, you know, we've discussed in the past how I sold all my Fujifilm gear. Fixed lens camera for me is the way to go. In our last episode, we talked about AI, which is going to blow these things up like so much with super resolution. By the way, my snapshot pick in our last episode was the image editor Acorn, which just had an update yesterday with a super resolution model up to four times an original size using AI, machine learning, and other magic, or I don't remember what the release note said. And the idea of a fixed lens camera that fits in your pocket, really fits in your pocket, right? The X100F, because that lens is so, what's the word? It protrudes very little. What, like an inch? Hold yours up there.
About an inch, maybe just slightly more.
I mean, that's great to have a camera that small.
I've actually loved having the X100V. I'm sure I mentioned this before. I bought it from a friend at a time when I wasn't even really looking for another camera, but he gave me a really great deal on it, and I've loved having it, even to the point where, you know, I like that was the only camera that I took with me on a trip to New York and Washington, D.C. And, you know, we've talked about the constraints of having a single focal length and all of that. But you're right. Like it is actually pocketable. I was walking around in Ballard the other day just taking some pictures while we were running some errands. And I mean, it's not going to fit in my pants pocket, but it fit in my coat pocket just fine. And it was nice and compact. And I think part of the thing that I want to get at in this episode, and I'm not sure if we can really do this, is there's an, what's a good word? Ineffable? There's something about the design of this camera that I think contributes to why it's so popular. Like, it's not just that it's small. It's not just that it's fixed, a fixed lens. It's not just that it's a very capable camera. Like, you know, this one here that I have is 26 megapixels, you know, good for just about everything. The new one coming out, the 106, is 40 megapixels. So it has Fuji's newest sensor, faster processor. The autofocus is a little bit better. And it also has IBIS, so in-body image stabilization, which is a huge deal for something small and portable like this. But the design of it is so nice with its dials, and it has character. Mm. And I think that's what a lot of people are gravitating toward. And I think why it was quote-unquote the influencer favorite that made it get really popular and then leading it to be sold out, and then Fuji having so many back orders that they just didn't fill them because they couldn't keep up with demand. Like, it's not a film camera, which a lot of people are getting into film now again, but it's like, it has character. It has, something where you are enjoying using it rather than here's a camera that I'm just sort of doing photo work with. Does that make sense, or is that too highfalutin?
No, I feel the same way, that coming from someone who started shooting film decades ago, God, I feel old when I say that. It feels like
five, 10 years ago.
Yeah. It feels like a camera that's designed to be a camera, not to be an electronic gadget. Too many cameras put buttons and dials all over the place, and it gets confusing, and you bump into things, and it just doesn't, it's just not comfortable in the sense that it becomes work when you have to figure out how to use a camera like that. And with the Fujifilm, and with other Fujifilm cameras, I had an X-E4, which is a small camera as well, but with the interchangeable lens. It's similar. Not a lot of buttons and dials. The menus suck, like all the menus on every camera. but it's not work. It's easy to use anyone can use it. You don't feel daunted. You can put it into automatic mode if you want, and you can use it, and you can take great pictures. And Fujifilm is known for its film simulations, which is, someone had an article recently that they're the only camera manufacturer who made film.
Oh, yeah.
So they've got the best of both worlds, that they're using their history of film stocks and using those colors in the camera. And that's one of the main attractions of Fujifilm cameras. I just want to mention that there are an awful lot more fixed lens cameras than we are going to talk about. For me, one of the deal breakers is whether it has a viewfinder and whether that viewfinder is usable. I once had a small Panasonic, I guess what you call travel camera, like half the size of the X100 series.
Oh, yeah.
And it had a tiny viewfinder, and I don't find that very practical. The problem with the Ricoh GR3 is it doesn't have a viewfinder. And I can't shoot very well if I'm just looking at an LCD panel, in part because I have a tremor, but the Fuji now has image stabilization. But you've got the sun around you. You can't see. It's, for me, that's not the real way to take pictures. I know iPhone, take pictures with the, there's no viewfinder on an iPhone, et cetera. But for a camera at that price, I expect to have a viewfinder.
Yeah. Well, that was actually something that I ran into, going completely in the other direction in terms of price with that Hasselblad that we talked about. And I'll put a link in the show notes to our episode about that a couple of episodes ago. The Hasselblad 907X100C. Anyway,
great naming.
It's a medium format 100 megapixel camera that does not have a viewfinder. It only has the screen on the back. You can buy an optional viewfinder, but it's not an actual viewfinder. It's just basically like a little targeting reticle that will, help you frame your composition.
Yeah.
And I don't think it like held me back, but I also didn't have a lot of time to shoot with the camera. And so I had to, solely rely on the LCD. And the LCD was mostly good, but if it was bright, it was really hard to see what I was framing, what the exposure level was. And even with something like the X100V, it has the option where you can just do like a straight rangefinder style. So you're just looking through glass and using some markings to frame your shot. But you could also switch it to a mode that has an actual LCD viewfinder, which is showing you what the sensor's seeing. And I use that all the time because I get my eye up to it, which is going to block out the sun and actually see what I'm shooting. And that makes a huge difference, even coming from someone who also takes a lot of pictures with the phone.
Mm.
It's just, I don't understand people who just ignore it entirely.
The optical viewfinder is one of the standout features of a couple Fujifilm cameras. Was it the X-Pro 3? I don't think they're making the X-Pro series anymore that also had a hybrid viewfinder, so optical or electronic. And the optical viewfinder, it's an interesting way if you want to shoot and not pay attention to what's going on. So you are getting frame lines that give you an idea of what you're getting. And if I recall, you can see what your levels are and things like that. And you might even be able to turn on a histogram. but it gives you a different view of what's going on. Oh, Jeff's going to take a picture of me. He's looking through his optical viewfinder.
Yeah. Well, and it also has like a little tiny preview, but...
Well, there's two options. There's a little tiny preview, and then there's a full preview. But getting back to the Hasselblad, remember, that's a $25,000 camera. It's meant to work on a tripod with a piece of cloth over your head when you're standing next to it, right? It's not meant to be, you know, something you pull out of your pocket. It's a big camera. It's a different type of photography. You know, I forgot totally. I have an article I wrote in 2022 on popular photography, The Joy of Fixed Lens Cameras, and I guess we'll have to link to that.
Oh, hey.
Because this is a topic we've discussed a couple of times. I pointed out that, and I think we mentioned this before, limitations spur creativity, that the limitations that you have mean that you have to think differently. Oh, you can't just zoom. So you move and you frame differently and all that. And I also talked about croppability. And of course, this is when the one that I had was a 26 megapixel. And now we're up to 40. And as we've been discussing recently, you know, with AI tools for blowing images up, it's like, I know last time I said, who's ever going to need more than 60 megapixels, right? Who's ever going to need more than 64 megabits of memory? What was that back in the day?
Yeah.
And we probably will, but no, we probably won't, because photos don't need that resolution. So I kind of feel like this is a topic we've discussed in many ways, in part because we have these cameras, in part because they're just a natural evolution of photography. And, you know, you point out the iPhone, and the iPhone's different. It's not really a fixed lens because you have the multiple cameras, so it's a little bit different.
I think what's interesting about this topic right now, and the enthusiasm for something like this X106, is maybe this is a trend, or maybe I'm just seeing it as a trend. But for so long, cameras have been feature. Like, it can do this, and it can do that, and you're going to love this camera because it has all of these other things, and you can have, you know, 20 assignable buttons, and like the complexity, and you know, like our new what is it, like the Nikon Z9 or Z8 that has an electronic shutter, and you can shoot some absurd number of burst rate photos, like 20, 30, 50 shots per second, right? And it's all super impressive, but it also is more than what most people are ever going to use. And so it's really relying on that thing that we've seen in the computer realm for years, which is, you know, oh, like, it's got all these features, and you got to have more features and more megahertz and more. And I love the fact that with these, like, yes, the new Fuji has more megapixels and it has in-body image stabilization, but it's not trying to become a DSLR. Like, they're not saying, you know, we could put a wildlife camera in a small form factor. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, you have a different... Like, if you're shooting wildlife, you're going to want a bigger camera and a bigger lens and all of that. This is something that someone can carry with them at any time and take photos. And I really like the emphasis on street photography, but just here's a camera that's not a phone that you can carry with you. You can get great results. And I think there's something about that category that is thriving, where the whole featureitis of most cameras is lacking. Because, you know, if you bought a camera in the last 3-4 years, specifically like a mirrorless camera, you probably don't need to buy a new one, like a general purpose one. But like, you owning a Leica that is also a fixed lens camera, and here you are saying, huh, well, you know, this might be good as like a second carry around kind of camera. I think it's opening up people's ideas to having something that's, you know, a quote unquote nicer camera that isn't the camera that does everything or the phone that has its own limitations.
So while you were saying this, I realized something.
Did I talk too much?
No, you don't talk too much. You're fine. You're easy to edit when you talk like that as well. It could be that you've got on the one side these DSLRs, big and chunky with lots of buttons and dials, and they're really hard to, you have to study them. You have to take a course in them to be able to use them.
Yeah.
On the other side, you've got the phone, which is pretty easy, point and press, point and tap, right? Maybe the minimalism of a phone camera is helping to boost cameras like the Fuji and, I'd say to a lesser extent, the Ricoh, which are both somewhat minimalist cameras. And if people want to graduate from a phone camera to something better with something with more options, they're looking for something that's not complicated, and these cameras are fitting the bill. And I kind of wonder if other camera companies aren't going to try and go into the market. Now, Olympus, when it was still called Olympus, they had some small cameras. They weren't fixed lens. The Pen F was very close to the X100 series. I had one of them for a little while. It was small. It was similar. It was minimalist. I wonder if we're not going to see some competition against the Fujifilm, because it really stands alone. It's a category of its own. The Leica Q, category of its own. The Fujifilm 100, X100, category of its own. The Ricoh, kind of category of its own. Mm-hmm. A lot of street photographers like it. It's less expensive when the X100 6 is $1,700. The Ricoh is less than $1,000, I think, something like that. Mm-hmm. No viewfinder, so you have limitations. I wonder if... I'm sure the other camera manufacturers see the popularity of the X100 series and think, what can we do to combat this? I mean, any of them could do this, and there are multiple options. You could even put a small pancake zoom lens on a camera, perhaps. You see them on little travel cameras that have zooms. So I'm curious to see if maybe this will spur more competition and more choice in the minimalist fixed lens camera area.
I don't have any data for this, but I'm wondering how much other companies possibly got a boost. The Ricoh is the one that comes to mind just because it's the one I've heard more of. But, you know, having the X100V basically be out of stock for, I think, all of last year, hard to get unless you wanted to pay, you know, a third party twice as much, like ridiculous prices. I wonder how much that boosted other companies' offerings for things that were like this. And I think even though, you know, the China pre-orders thing turned out to not be true, it seems that there are a lot of pre-orders for the new Fuji camera. There are a lot of people who I know at like their local camera stores and B&H and Adorama and all of that, where they've had the X100V on order for months and months that are being converted into X106 orders. So you're going to have like that backlog to fill as well. So I think there's still going to be a considerable constriction on the supply, and we're going to see sort of what we've seen with the X100V. And that just provides an opportunity for these other companies to say, hey, you know what? We've got a tiny little camera with a fixed lens that's great for street photography, and it's got almost the same number of features. And you know, hopefully their R&D departments have been working on this when the X100V got really super popular, which was, I mean, honestly, 2-3 years ago. So like there's time for that to bubble up and be in process and have the technology getting built by these other companies.
There's one difference, though. The X106 is being built in China, whereas previous models were built in Japan.
That's true.
So Fujifilm is scaling up their capacity a great deal. And I'm seeing people on Facebook groups for this sort of camera. Oh, I'm not going to buy it. It's made in China. And, you know, they're posting from their iPhone, which is made in China or whatever. So
right.
I just don't see the logic. And someone actually said... may not have been a native English speaker, but someone said, this one's not made by Japanese artisans. I was like, dude, artisans? This is not a handmade camera. And I pointed out, you know, it's not a Leica. Oh, well, Leicas aren't handmade. Right. Actually, Leicas are handmade or hand-assembled, at least. I know the lenses are hand-finished. I don't think they're entirely hand-ground. Mm-hmm. I think the grinding is machine, but they're hand-finished. And if you look on the internet, you'll find videos of the Leica factory in Germany of all the people putting together the cameras, and they are all handmade.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean it's better because it's handmade, but there is more of an attention to detail, and they're using higher quality materials, et cetera. Anyway, I think the capacity, we'll know tomorrow, at least our tomorrow, not our listeners tomorrow, because it'll be 10 days yeah. later. We'll know tomorrow when it starts shipping and more retailers start listing it, whether it's available or not. If it is available, that means that the flurry of pre-orders from the fanboys has passed. A lot of people who probably wanted to buy it gave up on it already. So it's going to take mm-hmm. a while for the TikTokers to realize that it's available now. And it could be that there'll be a burst in a month or two once a lot of people get their hands on it. I predict that they're going to do pretty well capacity-wise, and they're not going to, because it must be embarrassing for a company to have a product so popular that they actually can't sell it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And to have such a long ramp, a long lead up to this, they must have had a good idea of how many X100V orders had not yet been filled. And so, you know, all of that data to build up capacity in order to meet demand, even if they're doing it conservatively, hopefully they will have, you know, a good situation where people are not, you know, again, having that same experience of, well, I want it, but there's no way I'm going to get it for months and months and months. But some people will do that. I mean, you lucked out with your Leica Q3 by getting that early. Our friend Mason Marsh, he finally got his after 5 or 6 months, I think. And there are still people who are on the waiting list for the Leica Q3. More expensive camera, so people are probably more willing to wait.
Handmade,
exactly. But you know, if that's the thing that you want, people are willing to wait, even if it's, you know, a long time. They can, you know, use a whole bunch of other cameras in the meantime while they're waiting for the Q3 to arrive.
Yeah, there's probably not too many people who don't already have a camera. And I'm seeing on Facebook a lot of people have a V upgrading to the 6th. Others mm-hmm. which have older models upgrading, others who have a V and they're not upgrading because made in China, et cetera, et cetera. Or because they don't see the need for the feature improvement. They don't care about image stabilization. They don't see the need to go from 26 to 40 megapixels. Totally understandable. If you're happy with your camera, don't buy another one. Down with gear acquisition syndrome.
I am holding on to my X100V because it's still a great little camera. The image stabilization would be great. The extra megapixels would be great, but I don't need it right now. I love the pictures that are coming out of this. And, you know, when I was done shooting with that Hasselblad, oh my God, like you talk about Leica all the time. And now I'm going to be like, you know, when I had the Hasselblad, but no, this is actually in context. But when I was done shooting with that, which, you know, it was sort of an intense week because I had to take a lot of shots before the camera had to be returned. I spent a day down by the Seattle waterfront, just walking around with my X100V. And it was like I had, well, this is an exaggeration, but it sort of felt like I had rediscovered photography because I wasn't trying to, you know, be very technical and get all the things to show off the Hasselblad. I just got to walk around and I had this little pocketable camera, and there were a couple of times when I wished I had more zoom, but not really. And I had a great time. And that is why we do this, right? Like the experience of taking shots and hopefully coming out with some shots that are good.
I couldn't have said it better myself. How about we move on to snapshots?
Okay, my snapshot is not camera related, but it is a book. And it's a book, I just finished reading the second book in this series, and it's The Dog Sitter Detective by Anthony Johnston. And this is a cozy crime novel, which I wasn't really familiar with cozy crime as a category, but apparently it's huge. But it's written by Anthony Johnston. You might know him from the movie Atomic Blonde. He wrote the graphic novel that was based on. And I sort of know him through some other people who know him. And so when I learned that this was coming out, I wanted to give it a try. And it's great. the idea behind it is a murder mystery. The main character is this older woman who used to be an actress, and she ends up having to become a dog sitter to pay the bills and such. But basically, like, so the hook with these is that this woman interacts with dogs well, and there are dogs in every story and a different dog in each book. And that's kind of enough. Like, it's fun. It's a mystery. It's got a little bit of kind of a Columbo feel to it because you're trying to figure out who done it. And they're just, I don't know, they're fun. So it's the dog sitter detective, and then the follow-up is the dog sitter detective takes the lead. And I believe that the second book is only available in hardcover in the UK right now. It's going to come out in the US later this year, but the ebook is available. What do you have this week?
I have a book called Hokusai's Fuji. This is a small hardcover book from Thames & Hudson, publisher of art books. I've mentioned several times how much I like Japanese prints, and particularly for the composition, which I think is good for photographers to learn about. And what prompted me to buy this book is I kind of like doing Lego every now and then. And a month or two ago, I bought the Lego of the Hokusai's print, The Great Wave. They have a couple of Lego artworks. The Great Wave is the one with this big wave and the ships. They have Van Gogh's Starry Night, and I think they have one other. And I bought that, and I did it, and then I saw this book, and I wanted to get this. So it is an interesting hardcover. It is a spineless hardcover, which means that the back of the book is sewn, but you can open it flat. And since a lot of the prints are cover two pages, it lets you see the entire prints. So it has his early prints of Mount Fuji, then his 36 views of Mount Fuji, then a later series of 100 views of Mount Fuji, which are in black and white. The best known ones are the color ones, the 36. It has a few essays about his work. And interestingly, with the Lego set, there was, I guess, about an hour and a half of, they call it a podcast, but it was really an interview with different people talking about the work and how it was made and all that. And you can find it on YouTube if you're curious, if you want to listen to it. And I find that when you're looking at art, to get an explanation like that from, here's how it was made, here's how it was printed, here's he did these various things, it can be helpful. And it was enjoyable to do that while I was putting the Lego together. So this book is a closer look at the prints. It's a small size hardcover, like the size of a hardcover novel, but it's about 400 pages. It's quite long. So Hokusai's Fuji. That's my snapshot this week.
Sounds lovely.
And who knows if for our next episode, my snapshot will be the Fuji X100 VIX. If I find one available at short notice and decide, yeah, why not?
Wow. All right. I look forward to it. Until next time.
Okay. Until next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Photoactive. You can find show notes, including any photos we discuss in this episode, at photoactive.co. That's photoactive.co. We couldn't afford the M. You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/photoactivecast. That's photoactivecast in one word. You can subscribe to Photoactive in your favorite podcast app or on Apple Podcasts. See the links on our website. And think about leaving us a rating or review in iTunes or in your podcast.